welcome to PCMC, Black Lives Matter, to all the essential employees out there. Thank you for everything you're doing. I'm Mike Buongiorno. Here we are at another episode of PCMC. This is a podcast about all the things that bring you happiness in this dark, dark world. Movies, TV shows, video games, comic books, novels, you know, all the fun pop culture ephemera. I'm joined today by Mr. Vin Forte.
Oh my God.
Vin, I haven't seen you since Alf Loves a Mystery.
Oh, that Alf does love a mystery.
That episode, I'm still very proud of that episode. I'm waiting for the Peabody to come in on that.
Well, you know, we sent it out. They still have to listen to all the other podcasts.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll get around to Alf Loves a Mystery.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So, Vin, how have you been? How's your COVID going?
Good. Hunkered down, cooking, watching all the spikes across the country, watching all these comedians get canceled.
It's quite a time we live in.
A lot going on. Quite a time.
How is the other show you do, Wrestle Rap?
That is doing very, very well. We did a Black Lives Matter episode.
You did?
And, we had some people on who were in the wrestling community, who obviously were all black. And me and Emilio kind of just like sat and listened and had an honest conversation. And so go listen to that one, even if you're not into wrestling. Because we don't really talk about anything involving wrestling in that episode.
Well, that sounds fantastic. That sounds like a really cool episode.
Yeah.
So I want to say to the listener, we're still on lockdown, so we're recording through Zoom. So if our voices go in and out, or if it sounds a little, you know, janky, please bear with us. Okay, we're doing our best. Jen is with us today.
Hi.
She's the intern today. She'll be Googling things and helping out.
I stretched out my fingers. I'm ready.
All right.
My thumbs are ready.
Fantastic. Let's start with some news, as always.
Or what's in the news bag?
Well, you know what? Let me just say, you know, thinking about the great Stan Lee, he would say every issue is somebody's first issue. So this might be someone's first PCMC. So let me say, this is how PCMC works. We come out every Wednesday. We have full episodes, and we have mini episodes. Full episodes have three segments. Segment one is news and trailers. Segment two is the chill sesh. And then segment three is our current obsessions, kind of a recommendation segment. And then every other week on the mini episodes, you have all sorts of fun topics. Like last week, we did an episode on things we hate that other people love. And it was very offensive and inflammatory. I took Billy Joel to task, and I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. Vin, how do you feel about Billy Joel?
You know what? Billy Joel's had it too good for too long. He's been riding high on the hog for like 40 years. He does a show every month at Madison Square Garden. And his music is just, what's even the best way to describe it? There is a certain, like, New Yorkness about his music, but I don't even think it, but that's not in a good way. Mm-hmm. It's very, like, white parents, like your parents' music. Like, oh, mom and dad are going to go to Sears and pick out a nice rug.
I describe it as music your aunt listens to.
Yeah, I would say that. And Billy Joel's a weird guy, because if you really look at his work overall, nobody could say he's not talented in at playing the piano. But then, like, he jumps into all these, like, other styles of music that he has no business being in. Yeah. Like, out of nowhere, like, you'll just hear, like, some hot, like, guitar licks in a song. It's like, what are you doing playing around with that? Or like he'll do like some weird like synth thing. And it's like, yeah. What? Why? Or he'll just suddenly go into doo-wop like the longest time.
So this
he'll rip off Paul McCartney.
This is two episodes in a row of PCMC where we fucking stuck it to Billy Joel. Take that, Joel.
Take that, you fucking belligerent drunk.
So, well, I guess we have to talk about J.K. Rowling. Yes, she's a noted TERF.
Trans-exclusionary radical feminist.
So J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books and some other books no one cares about, she has a history. For the last couple of years, she's been tweeting transphobic tweets and retweeting other transphobic tweets from other people. And it caused a stir, but people were kind of just like, all right, she sucks, but let's, you know, it kind of cooled down. But recently, a writer wrote an essay.
Really ramped it up.
Right. A writer wrote an essay that was titled something like, instead of saying women in the title, it said people who menstruate. And it's actually a proper way to put it because the article was about menstruation. So it wasn't just like they were using people who menstruate as a, you know, a stand-in for the term woman. It was literally about menstruation. But J.K. Rowling has decided to mock it and said, huh, people who menstruate, didn't we used to have a word for that? I think it was woman.
Like, why is this the hill she wants to die on? Like, oh, well, you know, we used to call that a woman. It's like, well, trans women are women, you big fucking dummy. Like, and she tries to pull this card like, oh, well, you know, I'm friends of trans women and, you know, I support them. It's like, well, no, you don't, because clearly you don't want to look at the science. You don't want to have a little bit of empathy. Even beyond that, it's not even about having empathy. Like, everyone under the sun who's been involved with Harry Potter has been calling her out, and rightfully so. And she wrote this big, stupid piece, and I think it was The Guardian or The Sun, one of those British rags. And she basically, she almost pulled a Kevin Spacey, where, like, Kevin Spacey tried to deflect controversy with, like, a big reveal or, like, something that
We found out that Kevin Spacey sexually assaulted a young, underage man, and he tried to spin it like, hey, this is my coming out narrative.
Yeah, which is, like, a weird coming out narrative anyway. Like, yeah, I'm gay. I assaulted someone. It's like, what? Like,
right.
But J.K. Rowling came out and kind of did the opposite, where she was like, well, you know, I was assaulted. Like, my ex-husband, you know, he sexually assaulted me. And people came out and were like, well, that's awful, but that's not what we're really talking about. Like everyone came out and said, like, yeah, that's rightfully awful, but, like, you're still a TERF. Like, this, like, it doesn't excuse the fact.
Right.
Like, two wrongs don't make a right. Like, regardless of, like, the severity of one over the other, like, you're still a TERF. Like, you choose to not, like, what do you gain from dying on the hill of,
right.
She's digging her heels in. Real women.
She's totally digging her heels in. She refuses to listen to any of her many trans fans and just any, you know, open-hearted person in the world. She refuses to hear their narrative and keep speaking her own narrative. She refuses to go, oh, I understand what you're saying. Let me change what I think. She's like, no, I will double down and okay. triple this down. Is,
but that's okay. It's the same fucking dum-dum that made the greedy, like, goblin troll characters basically, like, anagrams for the Jews in Harry Potter. And right. also, like, had
control over money.
Had, like, one Asian character named, like, Ching Chong or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Like, she's awful. Oh, I'm. Did you know there's gay characters in Harry Potter? I'm not going to write about them. I'm just going to say there's gay characters in them, like, years later.
But when we then do a prequel movie where you see the gay character and his boyfriend, I'm not going to actually have them be boyfriends. I'm going to squander that opportunity.
Yeah. And also, Harry, he becomes a cop, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
Harry Potter becomes, like, a wizarding cop.
And see, the thing is, her argument seems to be that if we accept trans women as women, somehow that makes the world more dangerous for biological cis women. And that is wrong and also doesn't make any sense.
That seems to negate the idea that there's going to be creeps out there who are not going to sexually, which, like, first off, it's a dangerous game to be like broaching this, but, like, it's almost bringing up this weird argument that, like, a trans woman would not get sexually assaulted in the same way as, like, cis women,
right.
Which is, like, nobody should be, like, counting how many times. So, like, that shouldn't even be a thing that
right.
comes into the conversation. So, like, taking that out completely, Like, what's your argument then?
She first of all, nobody gets victimized more than trans women. Trans women are so often victimized, and she seems to be saying, like, oh no, if we accept trans women as women, somehow
she's saying that we're devaluing cis women.
Right. Cis women are somehow more at danger if you accept trans women, which just, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, like, does that go back to the whole, like, oh, well, trans women are going to start using the wrong bathrooms, and they're gonna prey on your kids? It's like, trans people just want to use the bathroom. Like, that's a stupid argument that's never held water.
Yeah. I read a really interesting piece by a trans female writer, and she was saying that, like, when she was a kid, she really liked the genderqueer character Nymphadora Tonks. But as she looks back now, she realizes that it wasn't inclusion. It was J.K. Rowling creating a genderqueer character and then having that character accept their cisgendered nature. And that's like the happy ending for that character. But, you know, this will go back to something that we've talked about a lot, which is the value or not of authorship. You know, there's a whole generation of really big-hearted people who love Harry Potter, and maybe reading Harry Potter is one of the things that helped them be so empathetic. And you don't have to give that up now just because the author is a shitty person. It's your reading that matters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You make of the work what you will. Only you can decide not to read something and be like, okay, well, you know, this awful person wrote a really good thing 25 years ago. Okay, yeah, I can't really argue that.
I mean,
am I going to run out and buy any of her new books? Probably not.
But who is?
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to fandom, I guess another example would be many people read The Lord of the Rings as being an allegory for World War II and everything that happened in the mid-20th century. And J.R.R. Tolkien was famously said, like, no, it's not an allegory at all. And, well, who cares? That's the way people read it. That's the way the hippies who read it in the 60s, that's how they saw it. They're not wrong.
Yeah, it's like the Star Wars prequel trilogy is all about the Iraq War.
Right. So, Jen, let me ask you. Jen's a big Harry Potter, she's a big Potterhead. And the first episode Jen was on, we talked about Harry Potter. So, Jen, how do you feel about all of this that's happening?
I mean, yeah, she's awful.
Does it break your heart as someone who grew up with those books and loved them so much?
I mean, kind of, but this has been stirring for a while. Like, it was a slow climb to this, so I feel like if this just happened, then yes, I'd be heartbroken, but we were slowly finding out that she was a terrible person, so I mean,
the writing was on the wall. It's not a shock at this point. And, you know, you mentioned this before, all of the cast of the Harry Potter movies have come out against her. Daniel Radcliffe, I mean, everybody, basically, I think everybody.
Oh, yeah. All the people that matter, basically, have come out and have told her what an awful human being she is.
And I can't speak for the dead, but I bet if the great Alan Rickman were alive, he would come out against her.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt.
Let's just take a moment and thank God that Alan Rickman is not with us to see this. Mr. Potter, McLean. Did you ever read them, Vin, the Harry Potters?
I read the first couple, and they got very repetitive, and I stopped.
I read
the first five.
So you're almost there, because there's, like, what, seven?
Yeah.
Although, like, the last one is, like, the size of the first four, though.
No, the fourth one is...
The longest?
The longest.
I read the first one, but, like, as an adult, it was too late.
The first one is also the most skippable.
I don't know. Like I feel like they should have... She made a big tactical error in trying to make the series go along with, like, the readers actually getting older.
What do you mean?
Like, the first couple books were, like, whimsical, and you're learning a lot about the world of Harry Potter and, like, all the cool, like, magic stuff that goes on and the places that they're going to, like, before they get to school. And then, like, the middle book books, and from what I hear, the latter books play more like a, almost like a interpersonal, like teen drama.
I guess kind of. I mean, it's not like Twilight teen drama.
Okay.
You know, it's like in the middle of the last book specifically. It's always dealing with some sort of like life and death situation, which every book does.
All right. So another thing in the news is there's a new Looney Tunes cartoon. It's on HBO Max, and it's designed aesthetically to really match the original theatrical Looney Tunes, the classic Looney Tunes. But in these new ones, Yosemite Sam and Elmer Fudd don't have guns. And all right, here's the thing about this. Do I think that's cool? Sure, I have no problem with that. That sounds like a good idea. But things like this always bug me because I don't know anybody who is asking for it. But I know conservatives that will look at it and go, oh, God, you libs are such crybabies. Elmer Fudd can't even have a gun anymore. And it's like, but we didn't ask for this.
I don't know. I feel like it's stupid, the outrage. Like, when have you ever watched a Looney Tunes cartoon and been like, oh, man, when's Elmer Fudd going to take his gun out and shoot that rabbit in the face? Like, I've never thought that, like, watching it a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Like, now they've done stuff with the gun. He's, like, tied the gun into a knot. But, like, that's all he's ever done with it. Like, it's never... They always do two things with the gun. They tie the gun in a knot, and they do the thing where, like, they curl the gun up so that it shoots back in his face.
Right.
So it's like, can I live without those two sight gags? Yeah.
See,
Say the bigger crybabies out there are the people that are getting all upset about them replacing Aunt Jemima and the cream of wheat guy.
Right. And that's another thing where I think, oh, that's great. That's a really great idea because those are racist caricatures. But I've never heard anybody say, oh, you know what the real problem is? And I'm talking about people who understand the cause. They want to change the police department. They want to change the laws. Their number one priority isn't Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima, let's change it. Cool. Everybody's down with that. But it's like, I guess when things like this happen, it makes me feel like we're giving ammunition to the other side. Because then the other side will look at this and go, look at you crybabies.
Nah, I think that argument has had its day. I think, like, now we've got to evolve the argument to hit back at them. Because the argument can't always be, we make a small, good social change, but because it's not as good as the big change that we want, that we get to be labeled as crybabies. It's like, no, we don't get to be labeled as crybabies because we're actually being progressive and evolving in even the smallest way.
Right.
Like,
Like
some of the reactions I've seen to Aunt Jemima being taken off the bottle is these people going like, oh my God, like how dare they, like they're ruining my my childhood.
But listen, is what I'm
saying. Really? You're gonna cry?
This is what I'm saying though. Like, I don't think it makes us crybabies. I think it's a small, cool, good move. It's a good positive move, but the other side, they're gonna have a bigger reaction to it than we are, and they're the ones who are, it makes us look like we value these things a lot more than we do. Like, we value them. Like, I'm not arguing that it's not a good thing to do. And obviously, we need to get rid of all the, you know, racist caricatures and stereotypes in our culture. But, like, it's like the kind of thing where it's like, for us, it's like, I think liberal people read it and they go, oh, cool, right on, good idea. And then we move on with our lives. Whereas a conservative person reads it and goes, oh my God, pancakes will never be good again, blah, blah, blah. And they make it a bigger deal?
Well, I say let them make it a bigger deal at this point because they're the ones making themselves look bad because the country's coming around. People shit all over Colin Kaepernick 4 years ago. And now you have the commissioner of the NFL coming out and saying that like the players should, like all the players should kneel. So it's like, that's a big step. Like, yeah. Like the tide is turning. Like, now people are actually holding everyone accountable and you're seeing that people who come out against Black Lives Matter, for example,
yeah,
are being shunned out of the room. Whereas even a couple months ago, it would have been like, well, you know, it's just their opinion. We need to respect everyone. No, we don't need to respect everyone.
Right.
If you think that NASCAR getting rid of the Confederate flag is gonna like ruin the sport of NASCAR for you, then good. They don't need you. And we don't need you. The tide is turning. Like, if you're gonna defend a flag that represents slavery just because you think it really represents like your grandparents, it's like, well, fuck you. Like, right. You're like, no, you are awful. You are an awful, cynical human being, and you deserve what you have coming to you.
It's
which
always
is, you're going right. to be an awful person the rest of your life.
Well, let me ask you this. HBO Max took Gone with the Wind off of its service. Now,
They're going to bring it back.
Yes, I know.
They're bringing it back, and they're going to contextualize it, which I think is a good move.
Yes, I'm all for doing that. To me, I'm all for leave it as a cultural artifact and, you know, put a disclaimer on it. But that's another weird move to me, because it's like, who even cared? Who was signing up for HBO Max because they couldn't wait to fucking watch Gone with the Wind? Nobody cares about Gone with the Wind anymore. So it's like...
Well, again, I think you're missing the bigger point, which is that these corporations are trying to get ahead of a lot of things that could be coming their way. So what they're doing is they're looking at what they have and they're going, well, how can we make a change? So you have, let's say, I don't know who owns Aunt Jemima, let's say Nestle. So you have Nestle looking at all their products,
right,
and going, oh man, did we have any blind spots? Oh fuck, that Aunt Jemima does not look good.
So you don't
change that.
You don't see it as good faith. You see it as they're covering their asses.
I see it as they're covering their asses, but I'm not upset that they're covering their asses.
No, because it means they're scared, and they fucking should be.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, HBO is probably looking at all the movies that they have on their service, and they're like, well, which one of these do we need to, like, take a hard look at? And
right.
And they saw Gone with the Wind, and they're like, ooh, an entire movie glorifying the antebellum South of the late 1800s.
Right.
Like, that's not good.
No. Well, another thing that's interesting, especially because I love Disney parks, is there is a cast members are what they call people who work at Disney, Vin. I don't know if you know that. There's a cast member at Disneyland, Frederick Chambers, and he started a petition. He works at Disneyland, but he started a petition to retheme the ride Splash Mountain, because Splash Mountain is themed to the racist film Song of the South. And he was like, this is a great ride. Why is it themed to Song of the South? Let's retheme it to Princess and the Frog. And he made a change.org petition, and it got a lot of fucking signatures. And then someone else made another petition to not change it, and it sparked this whole talk.
Well, because again, people get upset when things they've known for a long time change. And people get really upset when new information is presented to them that blows their mind. So if someone comes to you and says, like, if you've gone to a restaurant your entire life, and then 20 years into it, someone comes to you and goes, you know, the owner of that restaurant, the people who cook the food, they're indentured servants. Like, he just keeps black people like in the restaurant. They just like live in the restaurant. You'd be like, oh my God. And I've been supporting that for 20 years. Like,
right.
You'd be so upset at yourself, and it would be hard to like ever go to that restaurant again. But if someone said, hey, wait a minute, we're going to kick that guy out, we're going to free those people, and we're going to make it like a whole new restaurant where like those people who we held captive are now going to own the restaurant, and you can support them in something positive, like, why would you not do that? So, like, this idea that, like, oh, they're changing Splash Mountain, it's like, yeah, maybe you didn't know that Splash, like, I didn't know Splash Mountain was based off of Song of the South, but once I realized it was, like, this week, all of a sudden, it clouded my judgment of Splash Mountain.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, if Splash Mountain is based off Song of the South, like, yeah, why would I want to support that?
Right. I think you're right, because I don't know any Song of the South fans, even people who love Disney. No one's like a Song of the South fucking stan. So it's not like your beloved ride is being changed. I think you would only make the ride better if you made it based on a better movie.
Yeah, and by the way, they've done this recently, like for way less important reasons. Like they got rid of Tower of Terror to make it a Guardians of the Galaxy ride.
Right, they reskin things all the time. They also changed things in Pirates of the Caribbean. There was a lot of like rape jokes in there, and they took those out.
Yeah, women being chased around, and yeah.
Right. The new Pirates of the Caribbean reboot that's coming out, which stars Karen Gillan from Doctor Who and Guardians of the Galaxy, she is playing a character that was in the original ride being sold off, and now in the new ride, she's the auctioneer. So, like, they changed the ride, and now that character is having her own film. So these things change. But you know what? I'm never going on Splash Mountain anyway because it's scary. It has a big drop, and I don't do that.
Yeah, it's too chilling for my bones.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Come on. They gave these same idiots, like, they'll go on the Aerosmith ride, but they won't go on Splash Mountain anymore because it might get changed to Princess and the Frog. Get over yourself.
All right. Now that we've been two white guys talking about race.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Trailer Corner.
Ooh.
So the first trailer we're going to look at is Bill and Ted Save the Music or Face the Music. What do they do? Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Face the Music. They do a shitty sequel is what they do.
You don't think it looks good?
First off, I think it looks awful. I know the answer to this question. People were actually clamoring for a Bill and Ted sequel.
Yeah.
But was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, did anyone watch that and go, okay, I need another one of these? Like, I know this is building off of the cloud of the first movie. The first movie.
I disagree. I think the second movie's much better. The first movie, they time travel. And then in the second movie, they go to heaven and hell. And the second movie is what introduces the character of Death, played by William Sadler. And we see him in the trailer for the new movie, too. I think, maybe it's not your thing. When I was a kid, I was big into it. To me, it looks good. I mean, I don't know how it's going to be, but I was watching the trailer ready to cringe, and I didn't cringe at anything. It looks good. I mean, it definitely looks like it doesn't have a ton of money. But I think, I don't know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure it's going to be different from the originals. I know in the original movies they say the F word a lot, and I'm sure they're not going to do that in this new one.
No.
We don't have George Carlin anymore in it.
I don't know, I guess like there's part of me that just feels oversaturated by the whole, like, okay, it's 30 years later and we're going to finally get around to doing a sequel. Like, you got to have a really good idea to like bring people back 30 years later.
Right. I don't know. It seems like it's a time travel story, so I'm not exactly sure where it's going. You know, the first two, I think, worked together so well. I think following up the first movie with what they did with the second movie was such a good idea. And I think there's so much more memorable shit in the second movie, like Station and Death. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm looking forward to it. I think it comes out fairly soon. And I got to say, I'm happy that Keanu Reeves did it, because I think Keanu Reeves, if he had not wanted to do it, it would not have been done. It would not have happened.
Oh, yeah. This was a genuine passion project for him.
Yeah. And it's something that was in development hell for a long time.
Yeah, they've been trying to get this done for a good long time. And it's funny, Keanu Reeves is set to have a big next, like, 365 days, I guess, because he's got Bill and Ted coming out soon. And then he's got the next John Wick movie. And that John Wick movie, as of right now, is still scheduled to come out the same day as the new Matrix movie.
Whoa. And that's John Wick 4, right?
Yes.
And Matrix 4.
Yep.
I haven't seen any of the John Wick movies. Have you?
They are a lot of fun. You should definitely see the John Wick movies.
They look like a lot of fun. I want to see them. I don't know why I haven't.
Yeah, and in the third one, Jason Mantzoukas is in it.
Is he a villain?
He is.
Of course he is. Okay, so we watched a couple of trailers for some new PS5 games. PS5 was announced. Well, PS5 has been announced for a long time, but we got a look at some of the PS5 games, and we got a look at what the console actually looks like. People have been saying it kind of looks like a Wi-Fi router. I can't wait for PS5. So the first trailer we looked at is Stray.
It looks beautiful. You play as a cat in like the Akihabara district of Tokyo, it looks like. And you're running around as a cat, having cat adventures. And I want to be that cat. This is the game that people have wanted for a long, long time. Who doesn't want to be a stray cat?
I know. It looks adorable, and the images look beautiful. The teaser trailer shows a sort of post-apocalyptic world. We see robots everywhere, but they're kind of broken down. They don't look like they're great. We see some homeless robots sitting on the sidewalk, which is an interesting image to see. And, we see graffiti everywhere. There's graffiti that says, "Rest in peace, humans." So there's no more humans. And the only organic thing we see in the trailer is this kitty cat, this adorable cat, making its way through the cityscape. And like you said, you get to play as a kitty cat in this post-apocalyptic world. I got strong Love, Death, and Robots vibes off of it.
Oh, yeah.
I love the type of robot that has, like, the screen face and the expression is on the monitor. I'm excited. I don't know what kind of gameplay it's going to have, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a mystery. It's a good mystery.
So the other trailer that people got excited for is Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Yeah, which I think that was kind of a bait and switch.
Yeah, tell me why.
A lot of people expected that to be a full game, and then it came out. They're like, no, this is they're remastering the Spider-Man that came out for PS4, and the Miles Morales stuff is going to be like a new like side quest or like DLC for it.
Right, which is totally a bummer. But let me say this: I think the Spider-Man game for PS4 is one of the best games ever, and there's already been like 4 or 5 DLCs, and it's maybe the best DLCs ever. I mean, it's not just here's a little bit more. It's like really a continuation. So if this is a nice, solid couple hours DLC, it's not as good as a whole new game, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to disappoint.
It'll still be great. It's just classic, like, oh, we're going to finally do the Black Spider-Man, who's got the popular movie that proved to everyone that a Black Spider-Man is viable. And then all of a sudden it's like, but he's not going to get the full game.
Mm.
It's like, what? Just give him the full game.
Well, he's introduced in the first game. He's playable in the first game, but he's not Spider-Man yet.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting about the first game, which is it's a great Spider-Man story, but it's the rare Spider-Man adaptation that is about him later on in life, him as an adult scientist rather than him as a teenager. Which is why you have Miles Morales in it. You also have his dad in it. And it is interesting. I'm wondering how they're going to remaster Spider-Man for PS5 because it's absolutely gorgeous for PS4. I don't see what you can do. I mean, there's not a lot of work that you need to do, I think.
No, I don't think.
It seems to be more like they don't want the game to die. Like, we got to jump to a new generation, yeah, but we've got this gem that we don't want to get rid of yet.
Absolutely. Why should they?
And, you know, why not? You know, DLC is always thought of as like, here's a little bit of extra. You know what I mean? Like a trailer on an old DVD. But why can't DLC really be like a TV show? Why can't it be you buy the game and that's part one, and we keep giving you stuff and it's all good quality stuff? Why not?
Yeah, no, that's what good DLC is. Bad DLC is when they're actively withholding content from you. Like fighting games, every once in a while try and do that, where it's like, oh, we could be giving you, you know, 20 characters up front, but we're going to only give you 10, and then there'll be 2, you know, DLC packs that'll give you the other 10 if you pay like an extra $15.
Right. What do you think?
That's about, no good.
What do you think about Mortal Kombat? I've never played Mortal Kombat, but it feels like their big DLC thing is getting pop culture characters to be in the game. Like, how about the Ninja Turtles now? How about Freddy Krueger?
Yeah, that's cool, because that's like a nice little surprise. Like, they're not holding out any of the actual Mortal Kombat characters. Like, that is them truly giving you, like, something extra.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Miles Morales, did you see a teaser poster was released for the new Spider-Verse movie.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I believe, I don't know if it's 2021 or 2022, but it's happening, baby.
Yeah, it's definitely 2022. They definitely pushed it back recently.
Where's the Spider-Gwen game that I want? You know what? Where's the Gwenpool game that I want?
Yeah, where is Spider? I mean, they make all this noise about Spider-Gwen. But give her a game. Why not?
She's great. Well, you know, it's interesting. In the Marvel, the last Marvel Lego game, you have Gwenpool in it. And I fucking love Gwenpool.
Well, yeah, the Lego games have always done a great job.
Yeah.
Like, I remember even, like, the Lego Star Wars games were really good. Oh, yeah.
The Lego Force Awakens is unbelievable. It's great. I think it's the best Lego game.
Really?
Yeah. Lego Force Awakens is awesome. And it has everybody, like Carrie Fisher, Isaac, they all do voices in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they really went out for that one. So the last trailer we looked at is Perry Mason.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. Like, it's like new gritty Perry Mason.
Well, I read an article about it, and they say it's like Batman Begins for Perry Mason, because Perry Mason was based on a series of books in the 30s that were kind of more hard boiled. But then there was, for like 9 years on CBS, the famous Perry Mason TV show with Raymond Burr as Perry Mason. And in that, it's really just courtroom procedural. He's a lawyer. And in this one, though, it looks gritty. He's not a lawyer yet. He's a private detective in it.
I mean, we'll see. It's one of those cases where, like, okay, you want to do a gritty Batman Begins with Perry Mason. Let's see if they can get people to care about Perry Mason in 2020.
It stars Matthew Rhys as Perry Mason. He's that actor who also played the reporter in Mr. Rogers' movie. Mm. So he's got that really interesting face and that really, like, deep, sort of interesting voice. So he's a very interesting actor to watch. This is interesting to me because it's one of these things that I never watched Perry Mason. I remember it being on in my grandmother's house. But it's just like, it's just a name you've heard. And you're like, all right, you've perked my interest just because I've heard that before.
Right, like, give me a Columbo.
Vin, you took the words out of my mouth. This is what I want. I hope that this is successful and it leads to the Columbo reboot that I'm dying for. And what do you think about...
Who's playing Columbo, though?
Oh, I got it. Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo?
He's Columbo. Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Really good.
One day, when I'm done with PCMC, I'm going to do a podcast where I just watch a Columbo every week and talk about it. Why can't I do both, Jen said? Because that's a lot of work. And you know what it's called, Vin? It's called Where'd You Get Those Shoes with Mike Bongiorno.
Oh, you might get residual traffic. You might get crossover traffic from something you're not even aiming for.
Excuse me, ma'am. The obvious name is Just One More Thing, but I feel like that's got to be taken.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Alec Baldwin's podcast. But that's Here's the Thing.
Here's the Thing.
And nobody likes Alec Baldwin. Here's the Thing.
Have you ever heard the theory that Columbo actually doesn't have a wife? Because he constantly refers to his wife.
And that, yeah, what was it, like, that the woman from Murder, She Wrote is really his wife or something like that?
Look at my screen. Jen just Googled it. There is a Columbo podcast called Just One More Thing.
There you go. They beat you to it.
Actually, there's a couple called that. Yeah. Oh, the internet. You never... Well, you never...
Some of those should have done their research.
I know. So mine would be called Where'd You Get Those Shoes? Or Sir, You Can't Smoke in Here.
Or you kids want to play with my fake eye?
That never happened, Vin. I fucking love Columbo, man.
Columbo, Kojak is another one.
I never got into Kojak.
Who loves you, baby?
All right, let's take a break and we'll come back with the chill sesh. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Vin Forte. This is the chill sesh. This is the sesh where we chill. Vin, what have you been chilling with? What have you been reading, watching, playing?
The last time I was here, I just got an Animal Crossing.
Yes.
So I was big into Animal Crossing, and then I completely lost interest and then started playing Panzer Dragoon.
What is that?
For the Switch. That is a remake of a Sega Saturn game where it's basically like Star Fox 64, but on like a dragon. On like a dragon that shoots lasers out of its mouth. I will send you right now the trailer for you to, the like minute trailer for you to watch so that you can judge for yourself.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. I know this is highly unorthodox. I'm giving you homework now. Yeah, here we go. Where's chat? Is there a chat in the... Yeah, there's a chat.
Of course there's a chat. We're on Zoom.
Here we go.
Let's see here. Okay. Nintendo Switch. Was this a downloadable game or a cartridge? Or whatever.
This is downloadable.
Downloadable. I see dragons. Oh, this is cool looking. This is a remake of a Sega Saturn game?
Yeah.
And you fly through the whole game?
Oh, yeah. It's actually not a long game. There's only, like, 8 levels. But it's very, like, arcade style.
It's cool looking.
Yeah, like, instead of just going, like, as you can see in the trailer, not only can you fly forward, but you could change your perspective to look, like, left, right, and behind you. Because there's, like, stuff just, like, hitting you from all angles at certain points.
And how long have you been playing this?
I'm playing this like on and off for the past month. Like I'll run through it like every few days I'll pick it up and play like a level or two.
Yeah, it's interesting. When the pandemic started, the new Doom game came out, and it was one of my obsessions when it came out. And here I am months later, and I'm still playing it. I've played through all of Doom Eternal maybe 50 times now. I'm like addicted to it.
Wow.
And it truly is an addiction.
Do you play online with other people?
No. It truly is an addiction because I crave it, but then sometimes when I'm playing it, I'm like, why am I doing this? And I'll try to play a new game, and I'll even play a new game sometimes. You know, like me and Jen played the dark sort of fantasy fairy tale game, Little Misfortune. And we played that, and we beat it, and now I'm back to fucking Doom.
You know, it's a game that I know you like that... That I think I told you that I showed you the other day, but a good friend of mine is doing the comic book art for. They're coming out of Bendy Comics.
I'm so excited about that. Is it meant to look like the Bendy? Like Bendy is supposed to be like Mickey or like or like Oswald.
Like this, yeah, like 1900s like cart comics.
Like the 30s comics, basically.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And what friend of yours is doing that?
My friend Maddie G.
And they are, you had a podcast for a little while with them, right? Where it was all about animation.
And they also have done a lot of work for Oni Press on their Invader Zim comics. They put out a comic book or a graphic novel about a year ago, all about like queer and like basically a field guide for queer and trans teens.
That's
like
awesome.
A digestible sort of guide for like teens to use to like that answers a lot of questions in a very like frank but like light kind of manner.
Wow. We need to get them on this show because I remember I really liked that podcast. You didn't do it that long, but it was I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. It was Cartoon Buffoons, and I think they're all still up on YouTube if people want to listen to that. So, like, yeah, definitely check that out. And then speaking of books, the other thing I've been obsessed with is reading lately. I'll get burnt out on books every once in a while, and then I'll read, like, 3 or 4 in a row.
What are you reading?
The ones I'm reading right now. I am reading 3 books right now. 2 I'm pretty much done with. But the first one I just finished is NBA Jam, the book.
What?
Which is, yeah. It's by Rayan Ali. It's by a publisher called Boss Fight Books, which you might like some of their books. Basically, this is not completely accurate, but the best way to describe them is sort of like Criterion for like video game history books.
Huh.
In that, like, they'll commission someone to, like, make a book about a video game, and it's just like this really comprehensive like document.
Interesting.
So like they've got one. I think like they released like their next like slate coming out for the next half of the year, and they've got like one on Resident Evil coming that you'll probably like. They've got one on Silent Hill.
What's the name again of the publishing house?
Boss Fight Books.
Boss Fight Books.
Yeah, they've done. I think they actually have a thing in the front of the book. Yeah, also from Boss Fight Books. They've done books on Earthbound, Chrono Trigger, Super Mario 2. They do esoteric ones. Like they have a book on Bible Adventures, Metal Gear Solid, Shadow of the Colossus, World of Warcraft.
Wow, I gotta read some of these.
Tatamari Damacy, Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic.
Wow. You know, people talk
Shovel
about
Knight, Final Fantasy V.
People talk about, you know, all the digital stuff, like, you know, your TikTokers or all your cool, you know, SoundCloud rappers and all the stuff. But something people don't talk about is how right now there's a lot of cool little publishing houses putting out awesome books.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love Quirk.
Now more than ever.
Yeah. Like, and they all have a flavor to them, and they've got that same, I don't want to say the word postmodern because it's got a lot of negative baggage, but it's got that sort of hip awareness that you see from digital media, but it's print. I'm a big fan of Quirk books. I think I've talked about it on the show before. Look up Quirk. They've published a lot of great stuff. Right now I'm playing a really interesting game that it's a PC game, but I got it on through the PlayStation Network. It's called Those Who Remain. And here's the thing about it. It's not that original. The effects are really poor, really shoddy looking. Looks like PS1 level stuff. But it's maybe, I think it's the scariest game I've ever played.
Really?
It's got that, you know, early Silent Hill, early Resident Evil vibe. You know, you find yourself in a town that's basically abandoned, and you're trying to make your way through various buildings with clues and stuff. You know, basically a formula you've seen before. But mm-hmm. In this game, light is the most important thing, because outside of the light are these marauders, and they will kill you. And when you see the darkness, what you see is you'll see two pinpricks of light, which are eyes, and then you'll see a silhouette of bodies. And they're everywhere. Everywhere in the darkness, you see these, and they're still. They're just waiting for you to walk into the darkness. And they're everywhere. And when you shine a light, they go away. So a lot of the puzzles are, how do you get the light in the right place? Like, oh, I can't get past this hallway. Oh, I have to get the electricity going so I can turn on the light. And then you turn on the light, and then they go away, and you can walk through that hallway now.
Interesting.
There are a lot of moments in the game where you're inside of a house, and you'll open a door, and it will be dark inside, and then they're just right there waiting for you. Like, that's what's so scary, is they're ever present. They're always watching you. Sometimes you don't even realize that you'll just turn around, and there'll be a bunch in the darkness, and you'll be like, oh, fuck. It's just...
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Like, that's spooky.
Yeah. Just that premise alone makes it a worthwhile game. And it was only like $20 on the PlayStation Network. And on it, like, it's literally, it's bugging me out. Like, I can only play it for like 2 hours a day, because I literally get anxious. Because I'm just, the whole way through, and there's really no jump scares. It's just constant anxiety.
Mm.
You should really check it out. It's, like I said, it's not the best looking game. It's not even the most original premise or plot. But the whole gimmick of the light in the darkness, and the basically, like, all dark is lava. You can't go into the dark. And it's just fucking, oh. Mm. It's one of the best horror games I've played in a long time. And you know I love it. Horror games, like
Bendy.
It really is. Dude, check it out. Or, like, come over one day and fucking play it. Like, I'm at a point right now where I actually haven't played it in a day because I needed, like, a break from it. Because right now I'm at a level where I am, basically, there's this like monster lady who is chasing after me, and I'm running down this long hallway, and as I run, all the furniture in the hallway moves in front of me and blocks me. So I have to run and I have to, you know, navigate through the furniture as it's coming at me. And then like chairs will come at me and I have to pick them up and move them, or the lady will fucking get me.
Ooh.
And the lady's constantly, you don't ever stop to look behind you because you know she's there. And then when she gets you, she's got a crazy head and she's like, bah! It's so freaky. It's literally like, I have literally, you know, been playing the game. And then, like, the, you know, I'll move slowly, like, you know, like, I'll move my point of view from, like, left to right. And then I'll see, oh, shit, there's a guy right there. And I'm like, oh, God, no. Why? It's awesome. Were you, do you like the horror games?
I like a lot of the older horror games. I haven't really gotten into, like, a lot of the newer horror games. Like, I was a big, like, Resident Evil fan. Oh, God, what was the game? Clock Tower was a really good, like, early horror game. Alone in the Dark, Mansion of Hidden Souls for Sega CD was one of the first horror games I remember playing. I used to really like horror games.
You know, one that I've never played but is, you know, wildly popular is the Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, I would like to see your reaction to that, because that's like, it's become almost like such a meme.
Right.
That, like, I would like to go back and see if the original game actually has, like, some bite to it.
I've watched gameplay footage of it, and basically it's like a Russian roulette thing. It's basically like a jump scare is coming, and when's it going to come? So there's that anxiety.
Yeah.
Whereas I prefer a game that just has a constant state of dread.
Mm.
To me, that's more scary than a jump scare. I mean, a jump scare is, you know, I don't believe there's such thing as a cheap scare. Like, a jump scare is awesome, but to me, like this game that I'm talking about, Those Who Remain, it's just every inch of it is scary.
Yeah, also there's, like, a bunch of Five Nights at Freddy's games, and it's like, I don't know what the difference is between any of them.
There's also toys and dolls and novelizations. It's huge.
Yeah, it really got big, and it's kind of, it's really an anomaly. It's become a big sort of cultural touchstone for, like, a lot of teenagers.
Yeah. Do you remember the Slender Man game?
Yeah, based off the old Slender Man lore.
Yes.
Yeah, now the big, like, internet horror personality is Siren Head.
I don't know who that is. Who's Siren Head?
Let me send you a picture of Siren Head.
Oh, no.
Or no, you really should see Siren Head in motion. Let me send you a video that's, like, a couple seconds long.
Oh, God, I'm scared.
It actually is, like, kind of, like, if you saw this, if you saw this coming at you, if you woke up in the morning and saw this, you would get frightened. Where is it?
What about Pyramid Head? Remember Pyramid Head? Pyramid Head from Silent Hill.
Those Silent Hill games were...
They were good until they weren't.
Yeah, pretty much. But they were, like, so... Like, the puzzles got so esoteric at certain points.
Oh, yeah, I needed help from the internet to get through those games.
Yeah, like, well, I'm trying to remember, what was the one where it's like you needed to read Shakespeare?
Yeah, some of them, it was literally like you needed a walkthrough, because it's just like, or at least I did. I don't know, I don't think I'm very good at video games.
Like, you just couldn't figure out, like, how to like, the puzzles in it?
Yeah, I have no, to me,
okay, I think... Okay, so here is Siren Head, and I'm even giving you a comedy one, and it's still frightening.
Okay.
This is Siren Head blasting Gangnam Style, and this is still frightening.
Okay. Oh, he's like giant. He's like giant in the distance. I love it. I love the image of that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. How does that, but what's the gameplay of that?
Oh, I don't think it's a gameplay. I think it's... it's a game. I think, like, someone just created it.
He's just like a fucking meme.
Yeah.
The story of Siren Head. Interesting. I actually saw the Slender Man movie that was, like, 5 years too late.
Oh, yeah. That looked bad.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty bad. It's pretty terrible. You know, I was just going to say, when I'm stuck in a game, I have no problem looking it up. I don't ever think of games as achievements or challenges. I think of them as narratives. So to me, like, if I'm stuck and I just, I look on YouTube for the, you know, how to get past the puzzle, I don't know. I don't have any sense of, like, guilt about it.
No, why should you?
It's a fucking toy. It's
you
a fucking
paid
game.
$60 for that game, like, yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to diminish it by saying it's a toy. I love toys. But, like, I don't know. But, you know,
paid your money. It's yours. You could do it how you want.
Yeah, because there's something fun about that, too. You know, there's something fun about the looking it up. And I just got myself a new iPhone. I got an iPhone 11.
How's that treating you?
So far, so good. You know, my old phone was a 6S, and I was all out of memory. So I couldn't even, like, download games. Do you play any games on your telephone there?
Not really. I am kind of obsessed with this, like, phenomenon right now, though, where I don't know if you've seen, if you've been getting, like, ads for games that not really what the game is. Like, there's all these ads right now on social media, and they're all, like, from the same company. Wait, and they're all the same. It's either like you're pulling the pin.
Yes. What are those?
And like the art design is all this like Family Guy looking bullshit.
Yes.
And the games are not that. The games are like stupid, like level one, like not RPG. I guess it's like RPG kind of thing. But it's almost it's like very cheaply made, like generic mobile game. It's not a puzzle game at all.
Homescapes?
I think so. They have like a bunch of different scapes, but I think it's like Homescapes. Like each level as you build, I don't know. I got sucked in and I downloaded it and it's terrible. They're all terrible, but I think it's Homescapes because they also show up for every ad when you have like a free app, a free gaming app, and you have to watch through commercials at some point. They always show up, but I think that's what it is.
Yeah, what's the scam there?
The scam is that the game in the ad looks interesting, and when you download it, the actual game isn't. Like, that's really all it is. Like,
well, why can't they just make the game in the ad?
I don't know.
And you ever notice this? The game in the ad, they always lose in a very obvious way where you were like, no, don't do that. Like, they get your interest piqued.
Yeah.
By engaging you on that level where you're like, no, that's not the right move. Of course the lava's going to hit the fish. Ah, the fish is dead. The fake-looking Nemo is dead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's either the fake-looking Nemo fish or, like, the balding gardener with suspenders.
Or, like, the Family Guy.
Yeah, that's the home. It's Homescapes and Gardenscapes.
Homescapes and Gardenscapes.
Yeah.
But like, let me look up Gardenscapes right now.
Look it up.
Just, like, look up and see what this fucking thing is all about. Like,
part Candy Crush.
Oh, wait, so they're mini-games, though. The games we see are in it as mini-games. So.
No.
No? That's what I'm looking here. I'm looking at a Homescape at the App Store, and it's got an image of like the game they show you in the ad, and it says mini game.
No, I'm seeing that too, but I'm telling you that's not in the game. Like they're just lying to you.
Why? Why can't they? It seems like they made a game. I don't get it.
Like if you actually read the ad, if you actually read the reviews, they bought all their like 5-star reviews, by the way, because if you actually read the actual reviews, it's all 1-star stuff. But it's like designed to get you to spend money. Looks nothing at all like the game in the ad. Game freezes up. Blatantly false advertising. Designed to get you to spend money. I was enjoying the game until I realized the algorithm is designed to get you to lose. Don't spend your money on this.
It's funny. So many times I've been like, you know what? I should look up that game. It's almost worked on me a lot.
For every minute you play, you need to pass a Candy Crush hurdle and play a round of Candy Crush.
Really? There are so many Candy Crush clones. And Candy Crush is itself a clone.
Yeah, it's just Bejeweled.
Yeah.
But there was another one that was candy related that they like took it from, I think. Mm-hmm. Or like one of the creators. I forget the whole story.
And then they ended up being so successful with it and then like trademarked the word candy.
Yeah. This one's another one that's like false advertising because it's called Hero Wars and it's got like 10 million downloads and there's no wonder why it's got 10 million downloads because I'm looking at the screenshots and the first screenshot that's like the dominant one that you see on the page is that fucking ad.
Yeah.
But then like if you look at the other screenshots, it's like an RPG kind of game. Like, it looks nothing like it.
Which is so weird because that is a game. Like, that's still, it's not like you download it and it's nothing and it's just stick figures.
Yeah.
There's something there. It's just not the addictive looking thing that you want. I'm disappointed. I feel like games like this are the 21st century version of like Three Card Monty.
Oh, totally. And get this. In the I'm looking at like the fine print, like game info here.
Yeah.
In-app purchases listed as 99 cents to $99 per item.
$99?
So they're just banking on like some kid downloading this game and like accidentally buying a ton of in-app purchases, which is how a lot of these games like Gardenscapes probably make a lot of their money.
I'm sure. There's no free lunch, Vin.
No. And like, there's also Homescapes, Wildscapes, Township, Fishdom.
But these all sound like that they're Animal Crossing there.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, a lot of these are by some company called Playrix. And then there's one company called Winky Pinky.
That sounds like a fake. That sounds fake. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about our current obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Vin Forte, and Jen's here as well.
Hi.
So this is Obsessions. This is the segment where we talk about the things that we're currently obsessed with, the thing that is our thing right now. Vin, what are you currently obsessed with?
Oh, well, like I mentioned, I've been reading a lot. So I've got a lot of, my obsession has been reading more books. Like I mentioned before, I've got the NBA Jam book, and I've got another basketball book about the 1992 Dream Team. And then I've got this one's a little more interesting. It's called Among the Suggs, which is about soccer hooligans in the 1980s.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That's about soccer hooligans for primarily the West Ham football club. And it just goes into detail about, like, what hooliganism is, like what they would do. The back of the book actually gives a good like paragraph synopsis. It says they have names like Barmy Bernie, Daft Donald, and Steamin' Sassy. They like lager in huge quantities. They love the Queen. They love football clubs and themselves. Their dislike encompasses the rest of the known universe. And England's soccer thugs express it in ways that range from mere vandalism to riots that terrorize entire cities. Best-selling author Bill Buford enters this alternate society and records both its savageries and its sinister allure with the social imagination of a George Orwell and the raw personal engagement of a Hunter S. Thompson. This guy basically like embedded himself in with these hooligan clubs.
What do you think about this?
Because and then eventually,
on this show, we often talk about fandoms, but hooligans, soccer hooligans, are a very specific type of consumer that, you know, is a little bit scary. What is it about soccer that, you know, why aren't there baseball hooligans? Why aren't there Star Wars hooligans? Like, what about soccer creates these people who can be violent and scary?
Well, first of all, hooliganism isn't really a thing anymore. Like the most people will get drunk and rowdy, sure, but like these were like actual gangs, basically. Wow. And the reason soccer has sort of this sort of allure to it is because, unlike sports here in America, it's a lot more personal there. Because if you're a fan of, let's say, the New York Mets or Yankees, you know, we'll take a state like New York that even has like two teams. Like, we're lucky enough to have two baseball teams if you're into baseball. That's still two out of what, like 28, 30 teams total in the entire America. If you go to England, soccer, because of the way it's structured, has hundreds of teams. So like every small town like has their team, because unlike America, they have promotion and relegation.
Uh-huh.
So there's like there's like tiers to English soccer. Like there's the Premier League, but every year if you fall into the bottom three of the Premier League, you get relegated to the Championship League, which is like the first like league underneath the Premier League. And if you're in the bottom three of the Championship League this year, you're going to get relegated to League One, and then League Two, League Three, League Four. And there's like a bunch of like regional leagues. So it's like, if you're an awful football team, 10 years from now, if you really like work your way up, you can theoretically like get to one of the higher leagues. But then there are some football clubs that just, so like the money that comes in because of that can like make or break a lot of these small towns. So it's like super personal. Like nobody's ever thought about, oh, well, if the Yankees go under tomorrow, man, New York's really going to take a financial hit. But like if we had our own, like if Staten Island had its own football club and soccer was as huge here as it is there, and like the same promotion and relegation rules were in play, we would probably all to a certain extent love soccer, because if the team's doing well, then we're doing well, because then the local economy would be like, it would be huge. Like, the local economy would be great as the team grows.
So,
because, like, if you're a small market team, and then, let's say, in a span of 8 years, you go from, like, League Two to the Premier League, we're talking millions and millions of dollars in revenue just from, like, TV contracts alone coming into the local economy.
So, let me ask you, going back to the 80s and the hooligans of that time, were the more dangerous hooligans fans of teams that lost more or won more?
No, you always want
economic, you know.
No, they always want their team to win.
Yeah, but wanting your team to win is one thing. But
of these teams are most soccer teams are like working class, like they have like a real like working class like vibe to them. It's only like the Manchester Uniteds. And like the teams that have really been in the Premier League, like for a long time and have like stayed in there, that are like global names that court like, you know, sort of fair weather fans. But most soccer clubs have like very dedicated followings because they're also like really active in those local communities. So it's sort of like everyone knows everyone. It's very, like, there's just more connection to your local soccer club there than would be, like, a sports team here.
When I was in Manchester, England in, like, 2012, and I almost got jumped by a couple of hooligans. I was on the street, and I was alone, and I gave some money to a homeless person, and I was talking to her. Because I was a stranger in a strange land, and I was like, well, I've never spoken to a homeless person in another country. And they heard my American accent and must have thought that I was bothering her. And of course they were drunk. And one of them came behind me, and he did that thing where like he knees you in the back of your knee, so you kind of like fall a little bit.
Yeah.
So I feel that, and I turn around, and I'm like, oh, what's up? And then they're kind of all around me. And the homeless woman was like, oh, he's not bothering me, boys. Don't worry. Don't worry. And then there was cabs there. And then a cab pulled up right then. And then the homeless woman was like, you should really get in that cab. And I was like, righto. Good idea. And I got in the cab and went back to my hotel. But Manchester was a crazy place. I mean, there was like, I saw some guys pissing on the street. And then some woman was like, stop pissing on the street, you wanker. And he's like, fuck you, cunt. That was a real conversation I heard.
Yeah, they love using the C word in England.
You fucking cunt, they do. So my obsession is also a book. Look at us reading books. We're not out there doing fireworks. We're inside reading books.
Yeah.
My book is called Humankind, A Hopeful History by Rutger Bregman. And it's this really interesting sort of overview. It's not too long a book. It's only like 400 pages, but it's sort of a all of human history. And it has a very interesting thesis, which is people are good. Everyone thinks people are bad. Republicans think people are bad. Democrats think people are bad. Politicians, corporations, historians. Everyone seems to agree that human beings are bad, and you need to put rules in place or they'll be insane. And this guy's whole thesis is, no, actually, if you look at a lot of the data that we really have, human beings are pretty good and pretty nice and pretty awesome. And he sort of grounds his thesis against these two philosophers, Hobbes and Rousseau. Hobbes believed in what he called veneer theory, which was that civilization was just this thin veneer and underneath was chaos. And if civilization went away, we'd all be barbarians killing each other and it would be like the Purge. And Rousseau believed that civilization is what ruined us, that we were all fine and peaceful and happy and healthy and nomadic. And once we made civilizations, we started making hierarchies and we started making slavery and we started bringing disease, and civilization is the bad thing. And through their sort of argument, he sort of drafts this whole history, and it's really, really fascinating. Like, one of the early chapters, he talks about the book Lord of the Flies. Have you ever read Lord of the Flies?
Oh, yeah.
So Lord of the Flies is this very famous book. It's a novel where these English schoolboys, they all get marooned on an island, and they very quickly devolve into chaos and killing each other. And in the end, they're finally saved, but I think only one of them is still alive. Spoiler alert. Something similar to this really happened, and it was nothing like what happened in that book. In real life, there were a bunch of... This was in 1965. There were a bunch of school kids that got... They stole a boat for fun, and they got deserted on an island called Ata, which is close to Tonga. And it wasn't like Lord of the Flies at all. It was more like Gilligan's Island. They worked together. They made rules. They made a gym. They made a hut. Whenever they would fight, they would do timeouts so they wouldn't be angry at each other. They weren't at all. They didn't at all become violent. They worked together.
Mm.
Also, another part that's really interesting is you've probably heard of the Stanford Prison Experiment, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the most well-known psychological studies. And the narrative of it is that they, at Stanford University, they took a bunch of students and made half of them prisoners and half of them guards. And when the study went on, eventually the guards started abusing the prisoners. And the point of the so-called narrative of it is that people, if given power, will become abusive. But really, even if you read the original data, it's all bullshit. The scientists who ran it, they told the people playing the guards to be violent. And some of them even fought and said, I don't want to be violent. I don't want to do this. All of the data is bullshit. So the interesting thing about the book is, and the thing that I'm really living for right now, is this thesis that human beings are good. We're good. And I feel like that's a good book for the world to have right now. And it's a fairly new book. It only came out, I think, a couple months ago.
Okay.
So that's Humankind by Rutger Bregman. Really, I totally would recommend it, especially if you're feeling kind of shitty about the way things are right now.
Yeah, definitely. Get a good pick-me-up.
And then light some fireworks.
Remember that people are good. Yeah, go out with your buds. Crack a couple natty lights and light off some Roman candles.
Exactly. All right, Vin. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
You can find Vin on podcasts like PCMC and WrestleRap and Cartoon Buffoon, right? Is that it?
Yeah, Cartoon Buffoons.
There you go. We end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.